Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
I'm Stephen John Drew from Better Podcasting, a podcast about podcasting, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Not so fast, you big fat liar.
Why do you keep saying that?
Is she always this impertinent?
Yes.
First thing I asked you, I said, have you seen anything weird? And there's one important thing you failed to mention. See, I started this evening chasing an unusual energy reading. I followed that signal, loud and clear, to the Niagara generator. So why am I still detecting it on board this train with you? Whatever it is, hand it over.
This is one of the most miraculous things I've seen in my life. It's a mystery I intend to solve. And I've no intention of handing it to total strangers.
Strangers who just saved your life. Whatever you found is putting you in danger.
Yeah, both of you. You all right with that?
Dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Hayley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning. Welcome to episode 366 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've returned to Long Island with a TARDIS, but there's no convention hotel in sight. In fact, there's no one here at all. Where'd everybody go? Anyway, I'm Keir.
I'm Hayley.
And I'm Jay. And this week, the Doctor and her friends listen to some hardcore AC/DC. We're talking original AC/DC. As the current wars get interrupted by the Skithra during Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror. There's thunderbolts, there's lightning. Might say it's very, very frightening.
So this was one that we knew a little bit more about what was coming from our early season teaser trailers and things. You know, we at least got some glimpses. We got some glimpses of some scorpions running through what looked like a late 19th or early 20th century street fair. We saw a person who looked remarkably like Nikola Tesla, and at the time, then we come to find out that Goran Vishnik was cast in the role. So that was really something to look forward to, and then we got an opener to the season that dumped everything on its tail, and then had last week's episode. Okay, say what you will about that. So coming into this one, so right off the cuff reactions, Hayley, how did the Night of Terror help you sleep?
I love Tesla so much, and I'm so glad we got to see him showing up Edison for the entirety of this episode. Like, this was an episode made for me, so I quite enjoyed it.
Good. All right. That's interesting. I want to discuss some of the aspects of your previous knowledge of Tesla's career and pursuits and things like that as well.
I have a great anecdote to share, so can't wait.
Yes. Please hang on that. On tenterhooks, while I check with Jay and say, Jay, was this everything that you had hoped for in a straight-up Series 12 historical?
Honestly, yeah. It was. I feel like this is kind of quintessential Doctor Who. Like, it's not absolutely flawless, but it was a solid, good episode with some, like, you know, decent history to it. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. It was enjoyable, and I really can't throw too many stones at this one. I feel like it was fantastic.
It really had all of the key elements of what we would want from a historical that does involve aliens and nefarious otherworldly creatures, right?
Right.
We've had some implication that there was, in fact, Chibnall had even said in some recent interviews that he was willing to pursue the idea of a historical that had no sci-fi elements and just do it as time travelers out of time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But this, I think this folded everything in quite nicely. You know, it didn't feel like leave you wondering, well, how's that really going to end up impacting, you know, this individual or these individuals' lives going forward after seeing all of these wondrous future inventions and so forth. So Haley, you said you had an interesting anecdote about Tesla. Please share, because I'm curious about this.
Okay, so a few years back, I was on a Google Hangout with some friends doing a video call because we all lived in different places in the country. And somebody I hadn't met before had been introduced to the group. And I don't know how the conversation got there, but I said something like, Tesla rocks, Edison can suck it. And apparently,
you know, like you normally do.
This guy happened to be a huge Edison fan, and we had an argument for about half an hour about who was the better inventor, and he rage quit the hangout, and I have neither seen nor heard from him since then.
That's fantastic.
That is awesome.
You know, a lot of people that I had seen in reviews had wavering levels of familiarity with the current wars, or just the fact that Tesla and Edison occupied the same point in space and time. You
know, I know a lot of people that don't know that Tesla is a person that existed.
Yeah, no, there's quite a few people I know that would be a lot like Ryan and be like, you mean the guy that makes the cars?
Right, yeah. Yeah, precisely. Well, and again, even taking that away from the sort of the separation of the Atlantic as far as historical familiarity, but we've as North American students of the school systems here have had the Edison stories ingrained with us since what, fourth grade, maybe third, before you start to learn about the inventor of the light bulb and all the you know, but as it was probably, for me personally, it was at least mid-high school before the name Nikola Tesla was ever even uttered in a classroom.
I might have been in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which struck me as kind of unusual because I grew up spending a lot of my time around Connecticut, New York, and Long Island. So Wardenclyffe was right there. I mean, I've driven past this area I don't know how many times. In fact, we've all been in close proximity to it.
This is true.
When we've been at LIWHO and related conventions. But this is, Haley, you said that you've always been kind of a big fan or at least a history buff when it comes to Tesla. What was it about his inventive pursuits, or at least some of his scientific pursuits, that particularly appealed to you in the college years and beyond, since you got familiar with his body of work?
Well, so there's a few moments in history where I feel like, as a society, as the human race, we were really set back as far as our advancement. And like the burning of the libraries of Alexandria, the multiple times that happened, those are big ones. The Dark Ages in Europe, when, you know, knowledge was forbidden. So people like Copernicus weren't allowed to develop their ideas fully. And then even Da Vinci wasn't allowed to. And then Tesla being held down by our modern version of, you know, what was in the Dark Ages, which is like, we just aren't going to fund your ideas. Right. Like, those are some big things. There was a Stargate episode where there was a society that was more advanced than ours. And they explained like, well, there were a few times where like knowledge wasn't really developed here. So it's possible that somebody else is more advanced than us. Right. It's just him being the more brilliant inventor, but the crappy businessman. So his ideas not being propagated the way that Edison's were.
They really leaned hard into that as well, as far as like the mockery that he took from Edison and so forth. And just the digs all around of the fact that that they were not only at odds over some of their scientific aims or scientific theories and research, but the sheer nature of the way that they approached it. And that became such a fascinating storyline that at times I really didn't care much about the Scythra and everything they were up to. I wanted to watch these two go at it all day long.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw the Silurian blaster, I was hoping the Silurians were coming back.
That's okay. This idea of these conquering scavengers, parasites, as the Doctor refers to them, that have only accomplished everything that they have because they've taken things by force and don't even know how to operate it. We've run into situations of species like this before. But in this particular case, they're lacking something that we've seen in earlier instances where they didn't have a slave class that would actually do the implementing. Right. So they get stuck. What was your, as far as the terror factor, right? We were promised that we were going to get villains this year that were going to bring a lot of the dark horror back in. Did the Scythra do that for you? Or is it just we needed a big bad, bugs are scary, we'll go with a big bad bug?
I think they were good kid scary, less so adult scary.
Okay.
Yeah, I can get behind that. They weren't really, the threat they posed was slightly scarier than the overall design.
Mm.
Had we seen more of like the full-blown scorpion things, I think maybe it would have been a bit scarier. But okay. The only time we actually saw them was when they're tumbling through the streets and crashing into one another and, you know, kind of doing Three Stooges stuff.
Look, kind of like really Mario Kart Racing when you let the kids have the controller.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I did have a little bit of a question about some of their physiology, the fact that the queen is completely humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like, but she's got a tail that is somewhere concealed because there was a couple points, especially when she was entering the lab at Wardenclyffe, there's a point where the camera pulls to the side, catches her walking in profile, and there's no tail.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just a matter of other angles, you know, when they were on the ship and things, and she just, you know, it stood behind her or whatever. But the, you know, two arms, two legs, walking erect. I was hoping that there would be just a little bit of a mention, or at least that they would have done something with the body style to give her more of a, you know, the abdomen and so forth, the bug like kind of features, at least somewhere along the way, mm-hmm. because they put a lot of detail into her armor and everything else. Like you look at the I don't know whether it was supposed to be armor plating or boots or whatever she was wearing, but everything from the waist down, like there were belts and trappings and all these things, and it was exquisitely crafted, but very, very humanoid. Just funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but for I feel like that was just one of those things that because 99% of the time we saw her, it was just a close-up of the face. Like, they got the face makeup and everything like that was spot on. It was great.
She looked amazing.
Because that's all we saw of her. So it felt like it was kind of one of those things where they're like, you know, we're really going to have to do, like, a full-body shot at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, well, let's, here, throw this vest on her and the jacket, and we'll just light it really dark.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the fact that the lower mandibles off to the sides there actually glowed. Like the huge use of all this red lighting was really, really, really well done.
Yeah.
And then just the fact that, you know, we're talking about her at the moment, for the moment, we have to kind of give credit where credit is due that this is not an unfamiliar face to the Whovian scope. This is where we finally get to see the return of the Ronnie, but not that Ronnie.
Yeah.
So, for those familiar with the Sarah Jane adventures, Anjali was the character Ronnie, who I understand, I think it was Robert Shearman who told me at a con a couple years ago that that there was a way to actually connect them, that she was actually, that Ronnie from Sarah Jane was connected to the Ronnie. And I don't know how serious he was being. We were all very tired, a little slap happy at the time. But he was adamant about it, and I will take it as canon because it's Robert Shearman. But I would never, ever, ever, ever would have recognized her under all that prosthetic work. The teeth alone freaked me the heck out.
Yeah, no, those were fun.
So, I have a question for you both, and this has to do with our supporting TARDIS team here, Graham and Ryan. Doing their thing, you know, working as their kind of Abbott and Costello team to a certain degree here. In fact, even down to the this is not our first rodeo. You've never been to a rodeo. You're not helping. Lines like that, you know, which you gotta love them. But I was watching Yaz very carefully in mm-hmm. this story, as we've come to do quite a bit.
Right.
So let's go back to our Yazometer and talk about her presence in this story.
Yeah, we've been watching her very closely because we were trained during series 11 to watch for any involvement. You know, we're constantly waiting for that moment when she gets to, you know, make a face, and that's her whole contribution. Right. So, you know, it's one of those things where we're watching very closely because we want to see what her part in the story is, and we're getting far more than we bargained for.
Yeah. Haley, you had a theory at one point when we were talking about how she was impacted by her her time around the Spymaster, the Master, in Spyfall, and that there may be some repercussions and things that sort of linger with her. I think you would even at one point pose the theory that she was already dead or something. But are you seeing anything in what the story editors are laying in there for continuity from writer to writer? I know this is Nina Metivier's first foray into writing for Doctor Who. She's been a contributing editor in previous seasons. But did you get the impression that she's still hanging on to anything?
I haven't seen anything.
Okay. Just continuing to be. She is employing a little bit of her police training insofar as not necessarily sleuthing and looking for clues and being the tough guy or anything of that sort. But her ability to interrogate is not even the right word. She can sit down and sort of disarm people through conversation. She seems to be the type that anybody can open up to.
Maybe interview would be the better word.
I guess so, but with intent. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's someone in the case of Tesla's assistant that needs. That they need to get some specific information out of in a very kind-hearted way, or whether she's really kind of pumping for information, like she's trying to sort of lay into Edison a little bit. But yeah, I'm pleased to see that she can continue to play that aspect of it. I love the scene where she's trying to explain to Tesla his significance or the impact that he's going to have. And she doesn't want to give away too much, but she's just sort of giving him that knowing smile. It's just really, really endearing. And I'm so glad.
Can I tell you the issue I had with that little plot thread throughout?
Sure.
Ada Lovelace had to have her memory wiped for a similar type of knowledge. Why does Edison get to keep all his memories?
All right. This is what this was the one of my sticking points. One of two that I have in the story. Well, three if you count the way Edison pronounces patent.
Yeah, that one hit me for a second, but I let it go.
But I couldn't because he kept doing it over and over and over. It's patently false.
I just assumed it was because he was a pretentious D-bag.
Yeah, right?
That's my headcanon.
Accepted. But yeah, so the idea of the mind wipes, just last week we were having this conversation about what was happening with Nora Khan and Ada Lovelace as far as wiping specific parts of the memory, or in some aspects potentially all of their memory of what had just transpired, everything that they had seen, everything they had experienced, everyone that they had come into contact with, and specifically all the technology that they had seen. And in this particular case, Tesla has a conversation street side where he says he specifically wants to study the TARDIS. Uh-huh. And it's dismissed with a, you know what, you're going to invent some amazing things on your own. You go to it, buddy. The future is yours. Why do we think that the editors, that Chibnall in this particular case, looked at both of these scripts, chose to put them in broadcast order back to back, and left these two endings so dramatically different?
Okay, one wasn't quite back to back.
Are you ignoring the one in between?
Yeah. Which?
Yes. Yes, I am ignoring it. Just take it.
I can't say that I blame you. But I feel like they kind of made the excuse in the episode where, you know, Edison is talking about how incredible it is and whatnot. And someone makes the comment to him, something along the lines of, if you tell anyone, they're going to start to think that you're as crazy as he is. Like, Tesla can go and say whatever the heck he wants. People already think he's a little nuts. Edison is so concerned with the image that he wants to save face, so he's not going to say anything to anyone. So I feel like they kind of built that excuse in there.
Mm-hmm. But whereas, they could have had that conversation with Ada Lovelace, too.
Well, but, I mean, Ada Lovelace is somebody who took this machine that, you know, Charles Babbage built and turned it into something that no one ever could have conceived of before that. So if she came up and said, and soon we're going to have, you know, boxes that fly into space, people might have listened.
Mm-hmm. I wonder to a certain degree whether there was some thought of mentioning in the sort of the wind down and the explanation the doctor gives to Yaz, because Yaz is struggling with this, right? And she's not quite willing to let go of the fact that that they're not helping him forward with this. And for those unfamiliar, it's right around this time. There's a little bit of a fudging of the timeline here, of Tesla's timeline, that J.P. Morgan pulls the funding for Wardenclyffe.
Yeah.
And at that point, not only does that project start to fail, but funding starts to dry up and opportunities to be able to pursue continued research start to dry up for a lot of the major projects that Tesla had. He was so prolific that he had so many things going on concurrently that his descent into poverty also took its toll on his physical and mental health. So it was not a very graceful conclusion to his career or his life. And the accusations of madness were compounded by the fact that his outbursts and things of that sort became more and more public and pronounced. And it just, well, there you go. He's this mad scientist. He sort of, mm-hmm. it fed right into it. So I'm wondering whether there might have been some intent in Metivier's script or where she was headed with that conversation that would have said it doesn't, at this point, no one would believe him, sort of thing, or at least that subtext.
Right. And that's kind of what I feel like they were kind of getting at, is that there was, you know, leaving them with their memories wasn't going to disturb too much beyond what the, you know, beyond those two individuals. Where, you know, say, you know, Ada Lovelace remembering it could have altered the timeline drastically. I mean, it's very hand wavy and in no way holds any water, but at least there was the attempt was made.
And I just feel like if the doctor's going to be wiping memories, like that's something the doctor should have been doing for the entirety of the show. There's a lot of big historical figures who didn't get their memories wiped.
Right.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. I'm just saying that like it feels like they at least tried to acknowledge it, mm-hmm. though I don't think that it was done particularly well.
Right.
Maybe the better solution would have been to have one of the companions know about what happened to Ada, and then to bring it up to the doctor about why is this different. Like, really hit us over the head with it if you're gonna do something like that.
Right.
Well, and that's the problem though, is that if they address it too head on, then we have to start looking and being like, okay, but what about all these other instances and what about this and that? And then it just creates this whole cluster that they have to work their way out of, right, where they can kind of lightly hint at it, but not really get into it too much. Mm-hmm. And then we're just stuck sitting here talking about it on a podcast instead of it actually becoming a problem.
Right. I would have been happier altogether having them just leave it as, and the doctor and company depart, because there's something to be said with the way it had been handled in most instances in previous canon, that the individual who had come into contact with the doctor and or companions and or TARDIS and or, you know, full knowledge of travels through space and time would recognize the fact that either A, I'm never going to be believed, or B, they have potentially some sort of an understanding of the fact that this is the way things are going to turn out to be. So, you know, it's a glorious future ahead, but I live in the present, and we carry on. You know, things like, you know, take any of the instances where the doctor name drops coming into contact with you know, inventors and developers like Da Vinci and so forth in the past, right, or Vincent Van Gogh, you know, and the actual alteration of one of his greatest works, you know, for Amy's benefit, you know, this seemingly little innocuous things, but it doesn't change the fact that these people retained their knowledge. I think that's a cleaner solution, because it lets the viewer determine what they feel makes sense, and you can process it in your own personal way.
Yeah,
the mind wiping still bothers me. I think that was a bad call.
Yep,
I agree.
One thing I did want to check with you both on, and this had to do specifically with sort of a performance aspect. We had talked when we knew that Goran Vishnish was going to be cast in the role. I thought this was going to be particularly clever because both he and Nikola Tesla were Serbian-Croatian. Mm-hmm. So not only was the resemblance really, really uncanny.
Yeah. Like,
didn't have to do much to him.
Yeah. Like, give him a mustache, we're done.
Yeah, I don't even know if that was a hairpiece. It may have been. I didn't really
just know. A weird middle of the head part.
Yeah, yeah, quite. But I think what really helped, was the accent. I mean, there's so many times when you have somebody who historically you know has a kind of what we hear, you know, whatever, you know, North American viewer in this particular case, saying, oh, well, that's, you know, I could never tell you the distinguishing characteristics between a Croatian accent and some other, you know, Central European or Central Eastern European accents. But I could tell you when someone's doing a bad one.
Right.
In this particular case, it felt supernatural.
Wonder why
that is.
Yeah. Right. I think it just added to the overall kind of comfort factor. This felt like a really comfortable story. You know, the adventure, the nature of the adventure itself, the fact that we're dealing with an adversary who's a right bastard and doesn't really care. So it's just a straight up baddie. But you've got a tangential baddie in the form of Edison, who you can save a little bit of hatred on the side for if you're still hungry. And, you know, and the score and this and that and all. So what were some of the offerings on this plate, if I'm going to carry this analogy out, that really kind of satisfied you start to finish?
I liked all the little Easter eggs of, you know, baddies past.
Okay. Like our Silurian.
Just everything that the aliens had.
Sure.
I enjoyed the doctor needling Edison, or needling at Edison, even if he wasn't in the room. Like when he tells, or you know, when she's talking to Tesla at one point, she's like, you know, they requested you. That's got to be killing him, you know. And like, and Tesla being able to like chuckle about it with her.
That's true.
I like seeing the doctor be in engineer mode again.
Yes.
Very much so, yeah. This had so many of those, like it ticked so many of the boxes that we enjoy. You know, when the doctor's getting crafty, when it's got this plan that doesn't really go as intended on the first iteration, like, oh crap, the queen's not on her ship anymore, she's outside, but we found a way to get her back there using a callback to this MacGuffin that we set up earlier. And it's all those pieces. Just loved it. I particularly loved the times when everything would sort of slow down a little bit, very intentionally, so that you could see the impact on some of our principal characters. Like specifically when Tesla's he sees the TARDIS in his lab, everyone's walked into the thing, and they hold that scene of him like walking around, checking front, you know, and then stepping in and sort of gasping, you know, in awe at the wonder of it all.
And saying the thing without actually saying the thing.
Oh, and saying it in a way that an inventor who gets it.
Yes.
And she's like, yeah, spot on, first try. There you go. It was just fantastic. I loved it. It's it's a fun script right off the page. If you haven't just gone to read through the closed caption, go grab the transcript and read it through, because it's just fun right off the page, especially when you get down to, you know, the... what's Graham's line about getting them to stop squabbling? But when he refers to them as AC/DC, it says, "Can you two put your petty grievances aside long enough for us to save the freaking planet," or something to that effect? Loved it, loved it.
Yeah, no, I feel like this episode was just like the writing was spot on, the characters were spot on. I would have liked Edison to be painted more as a villain, but you know, that's just personal preference.
So an even thicker brush. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I see him. I know that he was just, this was fairly accurate historically speaking, I guess. I always envision him as more of a villain, and so it didn't quite do it for me, but.
Okay. I did say, there was one aspect, and I saw this in an article that I was actually somewhat unfamiliar, and I want to do a little bit of additional research on this, but it had to do specifically with some of the things that Tesla had at one point written about eugenics, and I want to find out chronologically exactly when in his career or in his lifespan he wrote some of these things, talking about the fact that to a certain degree he believed that with the continued, and I'm paraphrasing horribly here, but that with the continued intellectual evolution of the human species, that within, I think, some 200 years from his point of composition, so calling it around the year 2100, that we would end up genetically weeding out the intellectually inferior. So it was not necessarily a matter of a like an Aryan kind of recognition of a more predominant race or something of that sort, but it was a matter of the fact that intellect will weed out lack of intellect. But I think it was actually, when it was originally penned, it was a lot more harsh than that. Like, it actually was a lot more offensive, as we would view
right.
it. Are either of you at all familiar with this?
Vaguely.
Okay.
But it was one of those things, like, the way that I remember it harkens back to, like, you know, you hear the joke of, like, you know, like, just take the warning labels off of everything and let evolution sort itself out. Yeah, like that's the sense that I got from what I had read, but this was years and years and years ago, and I've had a lot of experience since then, so I don't know if that's actually what it was getting across.
Okay.
But that was kind of the sense that I got from it. I was like, all right, maybe it was a little harsh, but people today have said the same thing in a joking manner, and it's that's kind of what I got the sense of, was that it was just like, you know, we're going to advance so much at a technological pace that those who are unable to keep up will weed themselves out.
All right. Yeah, but, I wonder how that maps against things like, who was the, I can't remember the name of the gentleman who they ended up writing the documentary about, the transcendent man, the guy who said that we're going to get to a point with technological advancements that our own technology will end up surpassing us at an exponential curve. But this, I don't know, it gives me something that I want to continue to research, because just like you said, Haley, I'm kind of fascinated with a lot of his pursuits, but there were a lot of additional writings because he was so prolific and because he wanted to get his thoughts down, that I think during some of the periods where he was, I know he was prone to a wicked temper, went through bouts of alcoholism and things of that sort because of, particularly got emphasized when he fell out of favor with society. He used to be a sort of a high society, winning people over in social gathering sort of things, but that lost a little bit of its luster when Edison started trying to knock him down a few pegs. So it's just a fascinating sort of overall biography, but I'm curious now to see where this fits into the larger picture of a lot of his core beliefs. I understand why it might have gotten omitted or completely sort of left out of a script like this, because we've had a lot of historical figures represented on screen that we are handed just the facets that make for the good story. But feel free to dig deeper if you choose to, and they might not be quite as shiny.
Right.
But this is the way that the article that I had read discussed this said, you know, when it really comes down to it, this is the complete antithesis of what the doctor would promote. So it's an interesting academic pursuit, I think. Something I'm willing to do a little reading on. But hey, if we have any listeners who are kind of a little bit more familiar with this or happen to be really kind of hardcore Teslaphiles, feel free to enlighten us or point us at some articles that might or some reference materials that might be of use to helping me personally figure it out, because I'm curious. But as far as impact on the season, we didn't get anything at all that connected or implied in any way that we were going to work towards our timeless child arc. The only thing I remember, correct me if I'm wrong here, was just the one mention of the dead planet and the doctor taking a beat on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there anything else that looked like it might have tied into the bigger picture of what's going on?
I don't think so. I didn't catch anything like that.
Hmm. Okay. Again, it looks like one of those cases where showrunner comes in every once in a while and just says, do me a favor, just stick this little thing on the end here. Just help me tie my arc together.
I like this better because it's not in the end. It's just, this felt like something that maybe was in the script and Chibnall was like, ooh, phrase it this way instead. And then when we shoot it, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Let's tag this onto the end, even though it has nothing to do with the rest of it, just so that my story can, but he's looking for those spots to continue the story.
Yeah. It must have been at some early stage too, because I'm not really sure when they go and when they hand the edited or near completed edit over to Akinola for composition, scoring and recording. But the moment that little pause hits, and I went back and I actually grabbed it from Spyfall, it's the same low cello notes start playing in the background as when the Doctor is looking, you know, tears in her eyes, out at the devastated surface of Gallifrey.
Okay.
So they knew at that point, at least wherever they were in the assembly of this episode, that they were going to, that they were going to lean in on that. So cool, cool. I love it when everything's interconnected like that. All right. Overall impact on the season. Do you think, are we starting to set a bit of a trend here right now with some of these historical figures that they're trying to, that this might be something having to do with the theme of the season that Chibnall had told us is in there?
It sure seems like they're kind of telling us how we got to today with the historicals they're introducing.
Huh.
Technologically speaking, especially.
Right. Yeah. Specifically some of those key moments in our advancements that brought us to where we are. Yeah. Okay.
I wonder if somebody might go back and muck things up a little.
Tinker around with the chessboard a little
bit. Who do we know that might do that kind of thing?
The meddling monk.
Nobody. No.
The meddling monk is back. Well, we will have something to discuss regarding that in the news shortly, I think.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I thought this was a great... great addition to the season. It was, it was one of those middle pieces of the season that don't really have to tie into anything else, but it was an enjoyable story all on its own.
Yeah. This is one where, to a certain degree, you could hand this over to an unfamiliar viewer and just say, yep, by the way, the box is a time-traveling ship, bigger on the inside. She's got some friends to travel with her. She goes to the past. She goes to the future. She deals with aliens. Check it out. And you could probably clunk right through it.
I showed this episode to somebody who hadn't seen an episode at all this season, and probably not much of last season, and she kept up.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
There you go. Stamp of approval, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry. But that's a stamp of solid patent.
Just couldn't restrain yourself, could you?
I can't. It's stuck in my head now. I can't hear it the way Metabilis.
All right, let's go ahead and jump into the news.
We keep getting more and more little insights into the nature of putting this show together over the last couple of years, and the demands that are placed upon cast and crew that are slightly different than they may have been in previous cast and company, because of some of the ways that they've tried to really push the envelope and move the show forward. This article, it hadn't even really occurred to me, and granted, I'm looking at it from the absolutely wrong perspective for it to naturally occur to me, but I'm so glad that I did get a chance to read it, about Jodie discussing the additional pressure that she faces, not necessarily having to take on this role, as the woman doctor, but that this is something where there are repercussions, or at least an impact that lasts long after her tenure is over.
Mm-hmm.
So had this been something that either of you had ever even kind of considered, talking when we were, you know, back last year when we were talking about, or I should say 2 years ago now, when we were talking about this sea change in the casting, the direction of the show?
Absolutely.
Okay. So take me through it, Haley.
So I've said this before about other things, but men are allowed to succeed or fail or on their own merits, and especially white men. But if it's women or people of color, if they fail, they fail on behalf of everyone that falls into their group. You see this a lot with women as directors, especially for movies. Someone in an executive position will point to a movie with a female lead or a female director that did not do well and say, see, people don't go see movies with female action leads or female directors.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Nobody gets a shot at it again for 10 years, 20 years.
Okay.
So I can understand being nervous about doing this and messing it up somehow, and then we never have a female doctor again.
I had always looked at it as, you're absolutely right, but I had only seen it as far as they were going to condemn her personally if there was something wrong with the way that the program proceeded, or you know, critic response, things of that sort, that she would personally be attacked for it, even if it was something that she was not personally responsible for. But pulling that much further back, the impact of her, you know, yeah, and looking at things like the superhero movies and things of that sort as another example of, if this doesn't work out, they're going to be right back to the, well, let's just go where the money is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or even an individual director, if he's a man, you know, he can have a movie tank and it's like, well, you know, that particular movie just didn't work out, but we'll give him another shot because he's a good director.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, yeah, look at Nicolas Cage.
Endless.
You throw a million noodles at the wall, one of them's bound to stick.
Right, exactly. I will be the first person to throw out these freaking ratings conversations. I was commiserating with Graham Burke from Over Reality Bomb about this, because I know he's absolutely had it. Every single episode that drops becomes the death knell. Mm-hmm. Screaming about numbers and so forth. And yet, everyone that does sit down and put the time into watching these stories has said, wow, this season is on one hell of an overall upswing. You know, you've got your dissenting opinions here and there on some of the smaller details. But by and large, I mean, this season has been really, really entertaining. And I've watched the energy level in a lot of Whovian communities just shoot through the roof right now with conversation, with suppositions, with guesswork, with just general mm-hmm. interest about, you know, and then obviously the question always comes, wait, how many episodes are in this season? 10. 10? There's only 10? Yeah. What are we going to do after March? So
after next week, we're halfway through, guys.
Oh, well, that explains.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This explains why we've just been handed this new little teaser trailer. It's not just the scenes from next week, because we did have one that aired right at the close of the episode that showed us the scenes from next week, and we'll discuss that momentarily. But we also had this one that was dropped that showed us some clips of things that take us through an indeterminate point later in the season. But there's a lot smashed into that under a minute in time. Y'all get a chance to watch this yet?
Not yet.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do. Haley's going to open up the link. Right now, she's going to watch it. Jay's going to watch it. I'm going to go watch it, and we'll play the audio for you so you can sort of listen along with us and wonder where the heck all those explosions are. And we'll be back in like 45 seconds. You can tell us what you think.
Time is swirling around me.
How long is this going to last, Jazz? Is this our lives?
Sometimes, even I can't win.
Everything you think you know is a lie.
Who are you?
All humanity will fall.
So, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Very, very quick editing. Lots of stuff flying at you. But some of the things that they, some of the voiceover that they allow to persist, and some of the voices that they, or some of the faces that they hang on for a couple of extra seconds and such, could be a lot. The admission of some things even I can't, or you know, yeah. That's worrisome.
Slightly.
An admission of failure, not a good sign for our hero.
Yeah. So I was kind of confused, because I watched the I watched the Next Time trailer on BBC America, and this is actually what played after the episode.
Okay.
So I had to go back and find the actual Next Time trailer.
Oh, for episode 5. Okay, right, yeah. Right.
So I was confused at first. I'm like, wait a minute, what are we getting?
That seems like a lot next week.
Yeah.
This is busy. I had a question. I don't know if anybody started to take it apart to the frame-by-frame analysis yet, but there's an elderly gentleman's face that I see on there towards the latter third of this little segment that looks awfully familiar to me. And I could have sworn for a hot second that we were looking at either, and again, I will have to go back and freeze frame it, that we were looking at either the Black Guardian or the Valyard. I'm not kidding.
I was just assuming it was some other Time Lord. I didn't know who it was supposed to be.
A return of Rassilon or something? You know, if anyone is going to restore Gallifrey back to, you know, before this destruction occurs, that you have to start calling in some of the old squad, Omega back off his throne. But that could have been, well, Black Guardian would be a hard thing to sort of shoehorn in and explain that really quickly.
A little bit, yeah.
But the Valyard, you could do, I know, I talk about this every season. This is going to be the season the Valyard comes back. But this could really be the season the Valyard comes back. Because it could just be a matter of...
Now it's not going to happen because you said it.
Wow. No.
That's how it works.
I thought, no. What's our superpower? I have to ask a question. And then the BBC News Department actually releases something the next day that answers my question.
Or tonight, after we finish recording.
Well, I don't know, but it's a lot to process. It's a lot to take apart. And I think it bodes very well for what's to come in the season. What I still don't know, or what I'm still hoping to hear, is that they're going to give a little bit of a break, stretch the year out a little bit. Yeah, I don't think it would hurt to give us 2, 3, 4 weeks off for a spring break kind of thing.
Do you think a British show is likely to take off the week of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I'm not thinking so.
No, that's a hard no.
Okay.
But, because did they even do that for, wasn't there a point where there was actually a timing competition with the World Cup and it didn't even impact their broadcast schedule? I thought.
Are you expecting to remember when episodes aired more than a year ago?
You know we're watching series 12 now, right? Okay. Just check.
Okay. Guys, I have to go watch an episode real quick.
But at least we know that we don't have to wait any longer for the next one. It's coming right in the heels.
It's Fugitive of the Jadoon. So this is where we actually get the culmination of the one shot that we got teased with back in like March of last year or something.
Right. Yeah. With the whole
and
squad.
Sat on that for almost a year.
Yeah. Because we got that shot. We got some mention of who was going to be in the prosthetics. We got some discussion on that. We got some discussion on the fact that the prosthetics themselves have been advanced so that they could be more expressive, which
right
kind of cool. That they had more than 5 costumes, so you didn't actually just have to see the same 5 guys running by on a looped footage to make it look like a squad. That's cool. And this one's actually being written by Vinay Patel, who wrote Demons of the Punjab for last season and will be at Gallifrey 1 in a couple of weeks doing some live commentary and stuff. So I'm really interested to see what he's going to do with this story because this is so far removed from the last thing he wrote. Cool.
All right. Well, this has been episode 366 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, you know, I need to go listen to Back in Black for some reason. I'll be back.
And this is Kier saying, I'm going to sound a lot better next week because I got a new battery that I'm going to put into my mic here. I just got to lick it to make sure it's got some juice.
And this is Haley saying, well, let them talk. The present is theirs. I work for the future, and the future is mine.
We'll see you guys next week.
Allez-y.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.